Okay, everybody, so today's daf is daf Kuf Ayin Dalid, and we're holding the fifth line from the top of the Omer, Omer Rav Huna. You'll recall that yesterday we distinguished between an Orev and an Orev Kablon. We said an Orev is just a regular guarantor, an Orev Kablon is a much higher degree of guarantee. What difference is there? So we already discussed this yesterday. We're going to have further discussion about this today, that an Orev is always a backup, a secondary obligor, while the Orev Kablon is a primary obligor, which means in simple terms, gesundheit, that when the Malva wants to go and collect on the maturity date, if you only are a regular guarantor, regular Orev, first the Malva has to go to the Loive and demand payment, and if the Loive says Ein Li and he gives him a hard time, then you go to the Orev, the backup. However, if you're an Orev Kablan, then the Malva has a choice to go to the Loive or to the Orev Kablan. He doesn't even have to bother going to the Loive. He'll say, Loive and Orev Kablan, you'll make up between yourselves. I go directly to the Orev Kablan. Now the question is, how do you define what is an Orev and what's an Orev Kablan? If you remember, Brother Shai already asked yesterday, how does a person say, I'm not just an Orev, but I'm Orev Kablan? So the Gemara is going to give us a bunch of Lishoinus now, and we're going to see which Lishoinus are just simple Arvos, and which give you the higher degree of an Orev Kablanus. Zokti Yomar, Amar Avuna, Hilveyu Vani Orev, Hilveyu Vani Parea, Hilveyu Vani Chayev, Hilveyu Vani Etein, Kulin Loshin Arvosein. With the Orev to make the following statement. The Orev goes to the Malva, and he says to the Malva, do me a favor, Hilvehu. Hilvehu means, please lend him money. Lashon halva'a. So again, if he says Hilvehu, please lend him money, Vani Pareya, and I, the Orev, I will pay you back. Hilvehu, lend to the Loive, Vani Chayev, and I will be Mechuyev. Mechuyev means I'll be on the hook. Hilvehu Vani Etein, lend him the money, and I will, Mi'at Hashem, pay you back. Kul and Lashon Arvosei, these are standard Arvos Lashonis. No, they don't rise to the higher level of an Orev Kablan. However, if he said, Ten loy vani kab. He didn't say lend it to him. He said, give it to him. Vani kabla. Kabla, that's, that gives it away. I'm a kabla. Ten loy, give it to him, vani pareya, and I will pay. Ten loy, give it to him, vani chayev, and I will be on the hook for it. Ten li vani etein. Kulan loshen kablonis hain. Now you'll notice that the major difference between the first set of the regular Orev and the second set of the Orev Kablan is the introduction. Here it says each time, Hilveyu, Hilveyu, Hilveyu. And here it says each time, 10, 10, 10. What difference does that make? Because Hilveyu means, I'm asking you for a favor, please lend him the money. 10 means, you can at least understand 10 to mean, lend me the money, but don't bother giving me the money, just give it directly to him, I'll take care of it. You don't have to worry about anything. So he doesn't even refer to it as a loan, he says, give him the money, and I will then emit Shem, pay you back. So from the Malva's perspective, the Malva is not looking upon the Loive as being the obligor. He's looking upon the Orev as being the obligor, because the Orev is saying, basically to him, now instead of giving me the money and I'll hand it over, just give it directly to the Loive, and Mitzvah, I'll take good care of it. You don't have to worry about it.
No, it's not.
So what the Malva is thinking in his terms is, I don't even know who the Loive is. He said I should give it to Yankel, to Baruch Shmuel. I don't even know who it is. But since this good friend of mine has asked me to go and give it to him, so I will do what he has asked me to do. And he says he's going to take care of me. So as far as I'm concerned, the Malva, I'm looking upon the Orev as being the real Loive. The Loive is just the repository where I'm putting the money initially. But whether what that person is going to do with it, or invest it, or buy it, or sell it, and waste his money, I have no idea. I just know that I'm doing the bidding, if you will, of the Orev Kabbal. But you were talking about a case of Mamet Shloshtan, is a situation where a person has, for instance, a pikodoin in the hands of somebody else. And he says to him, I'm not going to take the pikkudin back. Do me a favor, give the pikkudin to my good friend, Yankel, Beryl, Shmer, whoever it happens to be. If all three people are there together, even though no one makes a kinyan on those funds, the din of mamish loshen is that now the shomer is holding on to the pikkudin, he has to go and give it not back to the original depositor, but to that third party to whom the original depositor has designated. Okay?
All these are oral statements.
All these are oral statements, that's correct.
So what happens when the Mala comes to get the loan back, and the RO says, "I didn't say 10, I said halvei."
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So what happens then?
What happens then is that the Malva then has to go to the Loive, and he has to begin, he has to first demand payment from him, and then maybe have to enter into legal proceedings. Mm-hmm. But at the end, when he sees that he's getting nowhere, then he goes to the Orev as a backup option.
True. Okay. So, but in other words, the oral statement of Kablanut does not necessarily, if the suit is not written down, it can always be denied and end up with a regular.
Unless you have witnesses.
You can always have witnesses. That's the best thing, is to have witnesses standing there, and the witnesses.
Oral contracts? Oral statements?
For anytime you have an oral loan, a milva alpeh. That means that the Malva is not going to get the benefit of anything written on a piece of paper. What am I going to do? When it comes the maturity date, then the Loive may just deny the whole thing and say, you're having a dream or you're having a nightmare. I never borrowed any money. You have to have the tuatim. Here too, for the Arvus, you could write the Arvus down, there's no problem. But if he did it orally, then make sure you have tuatim so that when the Malva wants to collect and he cannot collect from the Loive, if the Loive is penniless or it gives him a hard time, then he goes to the backup, he goes to the Arif. And if it's an Arif Kablan, you don't have to go first to the Loive, you just go straight to the Arif.
Okay.
Good. So this is the statement that Rav Huna made. But as we'll see, it's not that simple. Iboilhu, the Gemara asks the following question. What happens if you mix and match some of the Lishoinis? Meaning, the word Hilveyu, we said, that's a giveaway that it's a regular Orev, because he's saying, don't give the money to him, but he's saying, lend the money to him, and I will pay and I'll take care of it. I'll be the backup. So that's considered to be Arvus. In the second group of cases, we said, if he says, ten loivani kablon, then he is a mekabel, he's an Orev kablon. So now what happens if you mixed and matched the Lashonis? He said the Hilveyu, which was one of the first Lashonis from the first group, and he said Mani Kablan, which was from the second group, or the other way around. He said Tenloi, which was from the second group, Mani Orev, from the first group. My. So this is, if you will, a hybrid situation. Is he an Orev? Is he a Kablan? Amr Rav Yitzchak, Lashon Arvus, Arvus, Lashon Kablonis, Kablonis. Says Rav Yitzchak, even though you're right, the word Hilveyu steers us in the direction of a regular Orev, the word tenloi steers us in the direction of a kablon. However, because of the fact that he used either the term orev or the term kablon, that's the decisive factor, that's the decisive language. And that trumps any other language that he may have used. So even though he says hilveyu, he says any kablon, he's an orev kablon. If he says tenloi vani orev, then he's just a regular orev, not an orev kablon. That was Rav Yitzchak. Rav Chisda Omar, Kulon Loshen Kablonis Hain. All of the Lashonis that we used until now, that Rav Huna started off with, Hilvevani Orevin, Hilvevani Pereya, Hilvevani Chayvel, Hilvevani Etain, Tenlevani Kablon, Tenlevani Pereya, all of those Lashonis, Kulon Loshen Kablonis Hain, he's taking upon himself that he is an Orev Kablon. Bar Milvevani Orev, except if he uses Hilveyu and the Ani Orev, the combination of those two terms, then that really tells you I'm just an Orev. I'm not saying 10, give it to him. I'm saying lend it. Vani Orev, and I will be the backup guarantor. That's the only situation where he's an Orev. Rava says just the opposite. Rava Omar Kulon Loshen Arvus, saying all of the Lashonis, he's just an Orev, not an Orev Kablan. Bar, except for Tenloi Vani Noisen. You give it to him, and I'll give it back to you. The Rishbam says, even though the Gemara says that's the only Lashon, but Kal v'chomer Kolshkein, if he says Tenloi Vani Kablon, then he's certainly a Kablon. That's much even stronger than Vani Noisen. But he wants to tell you that not only ten loy vani kablam, but even ten loy vani noisim, he's saying basically, don't even think who the loyva happens to be. That's really not relevant. The important thing is, you give it, I'll pay you back. So therefore, what he really is, the orev is not an orev kablan, he's really a loyva. He's saying, I'm borrowing it, but instead of giving it to me and I'll give it to him, you know, let's cut out the middle step and just give it directly to him and I'll pay you back, I'll take good care of you. Omli mar bar amim ravashi, hochi omar abba. So said father, ten loiv ani noisein, ein lemalva loiv klum. What happens if he says ten loiv ani noisein? So that was the lashon that we just got through with. It's a lashon orif kablan, ein lemalva loiv klum. Then the malva doesn't even have to go to. Not only does he have to go to the loiv, the loiv has no duty to go and pay because the loiv didn't say, lend me the money, give me the money. It's all the third party. The Orev said, give it to him, and I'll take care of you. So you don't have to worry about who the loiv is, whether he's creditworthy. Says you have a loiv, but it's not the case. We do not say that the loiv is potter until yisav yisav miyad. In other words, what does that mean? If you have a situation where the third party Orev goes to the malva and says, we need money to help out Shimon. Shimon is in dire straits. What do we have to do? You know, do me a favor. You give me money, and I'll hand it over to Shimon, and I'll take care of you, and don't worry about it, Malva. So in such a case where the Orev is the one that actually takes hold of the funds, and he transfers it to the Loive, so then the Malva doesn't look upon the Loive as being the beneficiary of his loan. He looks at that middleman, the Orev Kablan, as being the beneficiary of the loan because he himself took the funds, took it from Reuven, gave it to Shimon, so now he is the primary, and not only the primary obligor, he becomes the sole obligor, the exclusive obligor. Then the Loive is potter because the Loive, I don't even know who the Malva is, I just know that the person in the middle over here, Yanko, was a nice guy, and he gave me the money, I'm very happy, etc. Okay, now the Gemara tells us the story. Who dined? There was a dayan, the achse le malva, the nechse de loive, mekame de lippe le loive. This dayan did something, if you will, which was very strange and unique, and that is, when the malva came to the dayan, and he said to the dayan, here are my shtoris, I have shtar choiv, signed by two edim, and there is a henpik on, and everything is grand and great. So the dayan says, yeah, what you're saying is 100% true. And I'm afraid that the loive will flee town, and maybe we can't find him. Do me a favor. The loive has certain property. He owns a piece of real estate here on 91st Street and Western Avenue. Can you already attach a lien on it so that I know that I can foreclose on it, and I don't have to worry about the loive? And the dayan says, yeah, that's a good idea. And after all, the loive is clearly on the hook, and Baruch Hashem, he has nechosim, so that's what I'm going to do. See, achse lemalva lenechse, he gave access to the malva, to the nechosim of the loive, mekamed lepe loive, without even bringing the loive into court. He did something, you know, a preemptive strike. I don't know what the loive is going to do. This is what the judge did.
Highly irregular.
He said, guess what? Salki Rav Chanan Bered Rav Yeva. Rav Chanan Bered Rav Yeva impeached the judge and removed him from the judicial.
That an impeachable offense?
So it appears. That he did such a. Even you were.
Such a high crime in this.
I wouldn't say it's a high crime, but he shows that he is not worthy of being a judge.
He's not listening to both litigants simultaneously in his court. He's not a Tohen Vinitin, and you got to listen to both sides.
All of that is correct. Moreover, Rava was very, very complimentary of what he just did. Omer Rava, manchakim lemebad ki hamilza, ilav Rav Chanan Bered Rav Yeva. Who else is such a chacham like Rav Chanan Bered Rav Yeva that he realized immediately this dayan should be defrocked and should no longer be able to go and sit as a judge on the tribunal? Why? What's the reason why? Kosovar next to the bar inish, einon mi arvin yosei. He holds that the nechosim of a person are akin to the orev of a person. In other words, first you go to the loive himself. If the loive has petty cash or whatever to pay off, great. But if not, his nechosim, whatever he owns, those are the backup obligors, those are the are the orev, so to speak. Utanan, malus chaver, they orev li from an orev. If you have a halva and there's an orev, don't go to the orev. And of course, we already asked yesterday, what's the purpose of an orev if you can't go to him? And we explained the kaim only yet for orev tchila. You don't go to him first; you go to him second. First, you go to the loiv, and then you go to the orev. So here, the loiv is clothing, and the loiv is nechosim, and the loiv is possessions. All of those are the orev; they're the backup. So you first have to go to the loiv to
men.
Sorry, once again. To metalton or whatever it is. First, you go and. And first you start off with Malvi, have a tain against the loiva, go and we'll write up a summons, we'll call the loiva to court, and now both are standing in front of the court, in front of the judge. Nu, Malvi, what do you say? Well, here's my star, and here's my edim, and here's my henpik, and everything is fine. Loiva, what do you have to say? I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Obviously, we'll give him some time to present his arguments and present his perhaps defenses. Maybe he'll say, it's true that this is a good star, but I already paid, and I'll bring it to Adam. Whatever the situation is. But once the loiva throws up his hands and basically says that either I have no defense, or he gives a defense which the rabbis consider to be defenseless, worthless, then they'll say, okay, if you don't pay, then we're going to go and attach. But you can't go and attach his nechosim before you give him a chance to present his arguments and present his case. And maybe, in fact, he doesn't want to pay with real estate. Maybe he has cash in the bank and he'll take it out and he'll pay that way. Anyway, the point is, since this dayan reversed the situation, went straight to the orev, meaning to the possessions, before calling in the loiva, that's why he was removed from the judicial bench. That's why Ravi gave a compliment and said, Rav Chanan, you did the right thing. And now we have another situation. Now, arva diyasmi. The part of the malva mikamidli diinu liyasmi. You have over here a situation where, unfortunately, Leilenu, the loiva passed away, and he left over Yisayman. And the malva, of course, felt a certain amount of difficulty. I'm going to go and take Yisayman to court, especially if they're not even bar mitzvah yet. You know what? He goes to the Orev, or the Orev on his own goes to the malva and says, Malva, don't be nervous, don't be upset. I'm going to pay you the entire choif. And I'll take care of the assignment. That'll be my headache, not your headache. Obviously, the Malv is delighted. So, Arva de Yasmi, he was an Orv on behalf of the assignment, those were the Yorshim of the Loive who had passed away. The part of the Malv and the Orv made good on the loan obligation by paying the Malv. Mekameh lo de inu liyasmi, even before telling the assignment. The assignment didn't even know about it. The Orv took care of the loan. So, what happens now? We have a machloket between Rapapa and Rav Huna Bereid Rav Yishua. Omer Papa, Priyas Bal Choyv Mitzvah, V'yasmi Lav B'nei Meved Mitzvah Ninu. The payment of a Bal Choyv is a mitzvah, for sure. Yisoyimim, Rishbam points out, these Yisoyim were not bar mitzvah yet, and therefore they did not have a duty to go and pay at this time. Rishbam points out, we're talking about that it was a milva al peh, because would it be a milva b'chsav, then it's not so much a mitzvah, it's just like any expense that has to be paid by the estate. Whenever you have a distribution of estate assets, the first thing is you have to pay off all of the overhead expenses and all of the loan obligations and anything which is outstanding. When all of that is taken care of, then whatever is left over, you can go and share and share alike among the Yarshim. In our case, however, it was not a milva b'chsav, it was a milva al peh. Being that it was a milva al peh, then the Yisoyimim would have an opportunity of bringing up whatever possible defenses they might have had, except that father's not here, they're not bar mitzvah, so they're really not empowered, and they don't have the seichel and stamina and the astuteness to be able to go and defend the case. So in the meantime, the Arif took care of it. And now the Arev would like to get repaid, obviously, by the assignment. They have no duty to pay it now. Rather, they'll wait until they're after bar mitzvah, and then they could handle and discuss this with the Arev, and if they find the Arev is right, they're going to have to pay the Arev at that time. Rav Huna Bar Yishua Omar, I have a different reason why they don't have to pay now, because Eimer Terore Atfesei, it's possible that the Malvah saw that things are that he's weakening in his state, and therefore perhaps he already gave tsrari. Tsrari means like a bundle of cash or of jewelry or something or other, as a mashkin to the malve, and saying to the malve, hopefully I'm going to go and pay you the maturity date. In the meantime, I don't want you to have to worry. I leave you here with my gold watch. I leave you here with a pocketbook or with a purse, with a wallet full of money. And so therefore, worst comes to worst, you'll be able to go and take from that money or from that watch or whatever if I'm not around. That being the case, although it was very nice that the Orev paid, but if that's the case, then the Malva got paid twice. He got paid the Tzrari and he got paid from the Arif. Yeah. And therefore, if the Yisoymim were of age, they might have said, one second, Arif, you did something a little bit premature, because if Tati gave to the Malva the Tzrari, then you didn't have a duty to go and give the amount that you gave, and therefore we don't have to pay you back. But again, they're not bar mitzvahs, and they're not in a position to really fight the fight or litigate this discussion. So in the meantime, both Rav Papa and Rav Huna Rabbi Yeshua agree that the Yisoymim at this point do not have to repay the Arev, but in Miat Hashem, after they become bar mitzvah, that's when they're going to, it'll be incumbent upon them to go and see whether they owe the money or not. Frank Timar, both of these reasons are nice. Rav Papa's reasons that they're not bar mitzvah yet, so therefore they're off the hook at this time. And if Huna Rabbi Yeshua is right, maybe in fact the Malve prepaid the Loive by giving him this mashkin. So my denai, what's the nafkimina? Ekebenayu kishachayiv moide inami dishamtu umeis bishamte. The case is bishachayiv moide means that before he passed away, he told all of his children, I want you to know, kindalach, there's a milva alpeh outstanding, and I owe the money to the malva. Make sure that the malva is repaid. Ah, so in such a case, we obviously do not have to worry about tzrari atzisei, because the father says, I owe him the money. So I didn't give him any tzrari. On the other hand, according to the first reason, the kids are off the hook at this time, because they're not b'nei bar mitzvah, and therefore they can go and push this off until they're after bar mitzvah. Or inami, another case, which is virtually the same, tishamtu umeis b'shamte, that there had already been litigation in court, and the loiv apparently was a person of means who was able to go and pay, and he refused to pay. And so therefore the bezin said, if you're not going to pay within 30 days, we're going to put you in cheirim. Guess what? 30 days passed, and he did not pay. And therefore he passed away with the cheirim on his head. No, so that's the, if you will, the monetary, financial equivalent of kishachayiv moide. He didn't pay. So therefore, you don't have the svara of the tzrari atfasei, but you do have the svara that the yisoyim at the moment are off the hook because they're not bar mitzvah. Sholchumitan. So, based on this, shamtu umeis b'shamte, they sent from Eretz Yisrael the following, shamtu umeis b'shamte, if the person had been put in cheirim, and he didn't pay, but rather he passed away with the cheirim on himself, in other words, in the legal status of being a menuda, a person who had a cheirim on him. What's the din? Hilchasik Rav Huna b'reid Rav Yeshua, that what, we are not choshed for a choshesh, for tzrori, because of the fact that if he was put into cheirim, and he didn't say, Bezdin, don't get so upset at me. Don't excommunicate me. I gave tzrari. Obviously, he didn't give the tzrari. Nobody wants to have a cheirim on his head. And therefore, we pass on like Rav Huna b'Rabbi Yeshua, that you can assume that, in fact, no tzrari changed hands, and that the Yisoyimim are going to have to go and pay either now or soon, either the malva or if the orif prepaid, they're going to have to pay the orif. Frank Timar Meitzer.
If someone don't want to pay, do they get a herring on their head? Is it inherible?
Well, it's a mitzvah for them to pay, but it's not a chiyuv, it's a milveh al peh, right?
It's a milveh al peh only until bar mitzvah. But after bar mitzvah, if the orif can show, or the malva can show that the father owed the money, and there is money in the estate, then they have to go and pay from the estate. They don't have to pay from their own pockets. However, if there's estate monies, and the malva can show that father did not pay, then it's not that they are on the hook, the estate is on the hook. It's the chafzer rather than the gavra. The estate has to go and pay for the father's obligations. So now says the Gemara, I'm going to ask you a kasha. Orev she yishtar choyv yoytz mitachas yodoy einoy goyve. What happens if you have an orev that has the shtar choyv? Not this was not an oral milvalpet. This was a shtar choyv. Yoytz mitachas yodoy. He's holding on to it and he's going now to the loyve and he's saying, I want to go and collect from you. What's the din? Einoy goyve. He cannot go and collect. Says Rishbam, ad gadli yasmi, until they get older. In other words, we're assuming a situation where there are young yorshim who are still lav b'nei mitzvah. When they get older, then he'll be able to go and collect from them. However, if on that shtar choyv, the malva made a notation when the orif paid him, and he wrote, yes, I received the entire amount of the shtar from my good friend the orev. What happens now? Now goyve, he can collect even today from the assignment. He can collect even today from the assignment. Mm-hmm. Didn't you go and tell me they're not b'nei mitzvah, they don't have to go and pay? Mm-hmm. Says Rishbam, by putting this a kabalti mimcha, we have now converted an oral obligation to a written obligation. What does that mean? Even though we're talking about ishtar choyv yoytze mitachas yadoy, that shtar choyv was only between the malva and the loyva. The arvus was only oral. Since it's oral, it is not considered to be a choiv which is payable. Or it's always payable, but there's no... okay, good. Shibud is usually used in terms of a lien, but there is no... There's no hischaivus. There's no obligation for these children that are not b'nei mitzvah to go and pay. Because if it's only an oral obligation, at the moment it's only a mitzvah. Being that it's a mitzvah, I'm not a bar mitzvah yet. I'll be over bar mitzvah, then I'll take care of my mitzvahs. However, by having the malva write down on the loan paper, on the shtar choyv, I receive the money. From whom? From the orev. Now the orev has a piece of paper that he can use vis-a-vis the children against the loiva or the loiva's yarshim. Ah, see, with this we've converted a milva al peh to a milva bishtar. I mean, the milva itself was always bichsat. That was bishtar choyv. The requirement of the loiva to repay the orev, that was oral. The orev said, I'm going to guarantee this choyv. By the fact that now he has that piece of paper from the malva, the malva says, the orev paid me back, so guess what? So now the loiva or the loiva's yorshim, they owe the orev based on this piece of paper. Ah, piece of paper, that's already not just a mitzvah, that's already a choiv like any other. If you get a grocery bill or you get a bill for the rent or whatever it is, then you got to go and pay it. That's not a mitzvah as much as that's a written hischaivus. And therefore the orev can demand payment already now. He doesn't have to wait until after bar mitzvah. So says the Gemara, this all sounds great. I can understand this type of series of events. It's talking like Rav Huna Rebbe Yeshua said, that what? That normally the Yisraelim do not have to pay the orev today. They can wait until they become after bar mitzvah, because shema tzrori atfasa. Maybe father, the malva, not the malva, their father, the loive, had already given a bundle of cash or jewelry or whatever as a mashkin to the malva. Aha. That's the situation where the orev cannot collect today. He's got to wait until after they become bar mitzvah. However, our Gemara says, at the top, so in a case where the loiva admitted and confessed to the children before he passed away that I did not give a mashkin, I did not pay any money to the malva, I owe the money to the malva. So said Rav Huna Rebbe Yeshua, if he says so, then you tzrari atvase falls away, and I can understand now why the assignment have to go and pay the orev immediately, based on this written shtar, where it says hiskabalti. However, according to the other man, the Yomar, who's the other man, the Yomar, which is Rapapa, Rapapa is kasha. Why is Rapapa kasha? Because Rapapa says, you don't have to go and pay anything, because of the said that they're labanei mitzvah. Here we're saying, by saying hiskabalti, then you do have to go and pay. Shani hosim dahachi torach v'kosav lehiskabalti. That's the reason why he wrote this kabalti on the piece of paper. The Orev asked the Malva, please write those terms. And after all the Orev had to do was ask the Malva, hand the shtar over to me since I paid you. Didn't have to go and tear up the shtar. Obviously, the Orev would not want you to tear up the shtar because he wants to use it to collect from the assignment. But he asked him, please write his kabaldi. Oh, that his kabaldi now transferred or transformed, I should say, what was previously an oral obligation now to a written obligation, and therefore you'd be able to go and collect even now, says Rapapa. If you take just a quick look at the Rishbam, Hayoytze mitachas yedei Orev. It's about 10 lines at the top of the Amid, right? The Orev has a shtar choiv in hand from the Malva. And he says, Yisoyim, you got to pay. Why would the Malva give me the shtar? The reason is because I paid him. So that's why he handed the shtar over to him. He doesn't need it anymore. So if you did not write his kabalti, then you cannot collect now. You got to wait until the assignment become of age. And then there'll be a litigation. Anytime a person wants to be payreif for nechzi assignment, he has to make a shvu and he'll get paid. However, the Malva wrote, "Is kabalti mincha min ha'arev? I receive payment." Oh, so they said the Gemara initially. I understand why Rav Huna Rabbi Yeshua, why you should be able to collect now. But according to Rav Papa, the Napanei Mitzvah, how can you collect now? Now you have an Orev that has a shtar. It's no longer that oral obligation of the Orev, I'm going to go and pay. Now it's a written, documented obligation. So by the fact that the Malva wrote on his kabalti, what was previously an oral obligation, which only entails a mitzvah category, when they're not bar mitzvah, once they're bar mitzvah, they're mechuyev. But until they are bar mitzvah, since it's only oral, it's just a mitzvah, you can push them off for the next 5-10 years until they become a mitzvah. However, by the fact that Odis Kabalti, oh, now even our Papa agrees it has been upgraded from an oral obligation to a written obligation. It's no longer a mitzvah, it's a choiv. Choiv, then the Yisrael have to pay the choivus.
So you need to take a
shua. Sorry, once again?
You
would have to take a shua. You would have to take a shua because of... Even written, any a bodily part of me next to you, same ain't the front elevation.
Okay, so
because since the Simon say we don't know, especially if they were little kids, we don't know what our father did. We didn't do who he paid, we didn't pay how much of us went. So therefore, you make a shvur, then fine, then you can take. Talk to more about it. I'm sorry. Hu arva, thank you. Hu arva, about 9-10 lines at the top. Hu arva, David Kacham. The only difference between the previous cases is that the Malva was a Goy. He was not a Jew. And what happened? The Orev paid the Goy even before the Goy went to the Yisoyim, before he went to the Loiva, he, the Orev, paid up the Choyv. So is this any different than the previous Gemara? So only Rav Mordechai Rav Ashi, Hochi Amar Avimi Mihegronya, even according to the second mandiyama, which was of Huna Bered of Yeshua, that I'm choishes that maybe the loiva paid in advance tzrori to the malva. So that's if the malva happens to be a Yisrael. Avoyvachom, the malva happens to be a goy. Kimin the baser arva ozel, since the goy goes after the orev, loichashin and litzrori. What means he goes after the orev? The minhag, or the law in Persia, was, by the Parsim, you do not need to go and go to the loiva, regardless of whether he was an orev or orev kablon, you go directly to the orev. And if you remember, we had this already in the Gemara briefly yesterday, that was the din of the barsoi, that you go always to the orev. So since you're always going to go to the orev, so the loiva says to himself, there's no purpose in my giving tzrori to the malva, because the malva is not going to tell anybody. This guy is just going to put the tzrori away, and he's going to go to the Arab and says, maturity date of the choiv, you got to go and pay. So therefore, no loiv in his right mind says this mandiyama mishmei derova. You're not going to go and prepay by giving him a tzrori or by giving him any type of mashkin, because he's going to ignore that. He's going to go to the Arab. He's going to go and get paid a second time.
How do you know that the Jew is not a crook to indulge?
How do you know that the Jew is not a
crook? Does the same thing.
You're talking about if
he gets the tzorori and goes to the Aryan.
Presume
giving the papers.
I understand what you're saying.
You can put him in shamta. You can make him swear. You can impose all sorts of external pressures that you can't on a Jew. That you can't on a guy. A guy's not going to care if you put him in chayrim.
We're assuming that everybody here is honest, but when it comes to the goy, it's not out of dishonesty. It's not out of dishonesty. It's just that since the rule in Persia was, did you go straight to the Horeb? So he's going to ignore the fact that he got the tzorei. Oh, it's very nice, I got the tzorei, but my deal is not with the loive, my deal is with the arv, I'm going to the arv. So become kim the basa arv, so then the loive is not going to go and leave any tzorei behind, so therefore when the arv paid him, he'll be able to go and collect immediately. You don't have to wait until after their bar mitzvah, because this is like a chayiv moida situation. Amalei, so he told him back, Adrab, I can say a fakertis for him. Just the opposite. Even according to our papa, that we're not worried about tzrari. Hani mil Yisrael, alayv dichom, kimen de dinayu, basar arva asli, since the din in Persia is that the malva automatically goes to the orev, ilad the atfase tzrari meyikara, they have a makabel lay. What's the reason why an orev is willing to take upon himself arvas? Because he feels, hopefully the loiv is going to be able to pay, and I'm not going to have to pay out from my own pocketbook. It's a 50-50 chance, maybe it's 80-20 chance, a 20-80 chance. However, that's only for dealing with a regular malva who's Yisra. However, if the malva happens to be an oivikham, since they're going to go after the orev, any normal orev would be nuts to go and take upon himself the arvus, unless he knew clearly that the loiv was going to be able to repay him, because the malva is going to ignore the loiv, he's going to go straight to me. And I didn't even get a penny out of this. I'm just getting headaches and heartaches. And therefore, what do I need this for? So now, Rishbam says, we're not talking about tzrari that the loiv is going to go to give to the malva. We just said a moment ago, there's no purpose in giving loiv to the malva, because the malva is going to ignore the tzrari, he's going to go just straight to the arv, like the Persian law allows him to. Here we're talking about atfasei tzrari meikara, that the loiv gave to the arev tzrari. And therefore, he's telling the arev, Orev, hopefully you're never going to have to pay, and just in case you're going to have to pay, good news, I'm already giving you a mashkin now, so you don't have to worry. Therefore, you can take upon yourself this arvus. And therefore, a regular, reasonable man would say, oh, phew, I don't have to worry, because even though the malva is going to go directly after me, because the malva is not Jewish, however, since I have this tzorari, I don't have to worry about that the loiva is going to ignore me, because worst comes to worst, I have the tzorari, which I can liquidate and use as funds. Okay, so now we get back to our Mishnah. Now, Mishnah now introduced something new about an Orev Le'isha, and there we said that there's a possibility of a Knunya. What was a Knunya? If you go back to the Mishnah on Kuf Ayin Gimel Amid Beis, fourth line, Shem Gamliel Oimer, Ha Orev Le'isha Biksu Vasa, Voyabal Megarsha Yadirena Hanoa. What's going on over here? You have a husband and wife who unfortunately are very, very poor. They've done whatever they could to try to raise funds. Unfortunately, they have not been successful. So then they come up, the Yetzihara gives them this evil plan in their mind. What they're going to do is they're going to go through a divorce, but not a real bona fide divorce, even though it looks like a bona fide divorce. He's giving her a get and all the trimmings of a get. But what is she going to then demand? I want now to get a ksuba from you. The husband unfortunately doesn't have the funds to pay the ksuba, and there was an orev initially when they got married. Oh, so I have a good idea. Let's now say to the woman goes and takes the husband, the wife takes the husband to court, you owe me my ksuba. The Baal says, ainly. The Beis Din decides that there's no property to attach, neither b'nei choyren nor mishubadim. Okay. So then she's going to go to the Orev. The Orev is going to have to pay the whole ksuba, the whole 200, or toisis ksuba, whatever it says in the ksuba, and give it to the woman. And then the woman goes back to the husband and says, let's get remarried. They're going to get remarried, and now they're both going to be able to split the amount of the ksuba between them. They'll have parnosa for the next 6 months or whatever. So therefore, the only way to prevent such a situation is Yadirena Hanor. Precisely Yadirena Hanor. The Baal should now go and swear, and this has got to be an oath which you cannot be mefer or matir, says the Rishbam. It's a neder al das rabim she'ein lehafora ein lehatara, and therefore he cannot change his mind. And now I don't have to worry about that he's going to go and divorce his wife and he's going to take her back, because he's not allowed to take her back. So that would be an effective eitza, not to allow for such a kanunya where they're going to try to get the Oreif to put up money so that they'll be able to use and split after they defraud him by afterwards remarrying the next day. So that's what we learned in the Mishnah. So now the Gemara tells us a real life story that happened. Moshe Bar Atri. That was his name, Moshe Bar Atri. Arba, he was an Oreif, the Kuvasa, the Kalse Hava. Meaning he was the Oreif on behalf of his own son. He knew that his son is a shtikel lo yitzlach, and he may not be able to go and pay the ksuba. So he said to the kala before they got married, "Don't worry, I'm the orev." Sorry.
Yeah, don't worry.
Don't worry that if and when chas v'shalom this marriage terminates, I'll make good for the ksuba. Who was the son of Moshe bar Atzri? It was Rav Huna his son. And this Rav Huna, although he was not successful at business, tumer ban haba. However, he was a talmud chacham.
Is this the Rav Huna of the Gemara?
It doesn't say. I doubt it, because I don't remember here of Rav Huna bar Moshe. You know, so, but maybe the Gemara doesn't refer to his father. It doesn't sound like it. Anyway, so Rav Huna, the son of Moshe bar Atzri, was having a difficult time. He was a Talmud Chacham. Rav Huna of Shas is not just a Talmud Chacham. He was one of the great Gedolei Hador. Exactly. Tzurba, the Rashi says in the beginning of Masechus Tanis, means a young Talmud Chacham. So it could be the Rav Huna in his youth, but it's unlikely. Anyway, so Rav Huna Berei was a Tumen Rabban Hava. And unfortunately, things were very tight at home. They couldn't pay the rent. They couldn't pay the grocery bills. What do we do? Omer Abai. So Abai was now speaking out loud. Leka de nasal de nasve etzel Rav Huna. Isn't there anyone that could go and give an etzel Rav Huna quietly? Rav Huna, nigrishel debisu, go and divorce your wife. Teizel tigze ksuva me avua, go and collect the ksuva from. The word avua is imprecise. It should say me oviv, not me avua, because that's the one that is that is the orev was his father. Anyway, go and collect the ksuva from his father. V'hod nehadra, and after that, let them get back together again, and they'll be able to go and do the kanunya of our Mishnah. They'll be able to go and support themselves. Amalei Rava, so Rava says, Abaya, you know the Mishnah as well as I do. For yadrena no tonight, shteitach in the Mishnah, you have to be madrena no. Omele Abayis says, of course I know what it says in the Mishnah. But also called the Megarish, Bebedina Megarish. You think everybody that goes and gives a get does in front of Bezin? You don't have to do in front of Bezin, as long as it's a good cipher that knows what he's doing, and the Adam signed it. So you can go and have a private ceremony, so to speak, a private get. And now the wife, the former wife, goes now to her former Shver, and says, Shver Leim, I have over here a Ksuvir. Your son gave me a gift. Really gave you a gift? I am so sorry to hear that. Well, too bad, so sad. Abulamasa, you have to go and pay on my ksuba. And therefore, they'll be able to go and collect based on this Eitzah that Abaya said, shouldn't you go and give this Eitzah to Rav Huna? They'll be able to have now money in their marriage. We're not finished yet, Rabbi Sai. Lesoif, subsequently, Abaya found out, Igloi Milton the Koyenhu, that this Rav Huna, the son of Moshe bar Atzri,
like Abai himself was a Kohen.
Fine. That being the case, since he's a Kohen, right, would he be able to go and take back his wife? Avadanish. So this Eitzah would never have worked for him in the first place. The whole Eitzah was, they'll make a Kenunya, they'll remarry, they'll split the funds, and they'll be able to have now Parnosa for the next few months. He won't have any Parnosa for a while, because he can't go and, she can go and collect, yeah, but he won't be able to take her back as the wife. And therefore, Amar Abaye, once he heard that, it's Hainu de Amri Inchi, that's why there's an expression. Basa Anya Azla Aniyusa. Unfortunately, after the Aniyim comes poverty. In other words, a person who's an Ani, yes, he tries with all of his might and all of his power to lift himself from this dire strait, but unfortunately, often the mazel is such that the Ani, no matter what he does, unfortunately, poverty follows him wherever he goes. Mori uses that expression also legabi bikurim, that it's the aniyim that bring these cheap baskets, while the ashirim bring cults of shulzov, golden baskets, and it says that the balbat and the rich people that bring the cult of shulzov, they take the baskets back after they deliver the bikurim to the kahanim in the Beis Hamikdash. However, the aniyim, these are relatively cheap baskets, so they leave it already, even though for an oni, every penny is valuable, but they leave it. So the Gemara says about that, see here too, I thought we'd have an Eitzah Toivah for Rav Huna. Mekenish, he's a Kohen, nothing we can do. I don't even understand how Abaye entertained. Doesn't someone, isn't there somebody out there that can go and give an Eitzah Toivah for Rav Huna? Hi, Omer Abaye. Abaye said, "Ezeu Rosha Orum Zamesi Eitzel Limkor Benechosim Kerab Shimon Gamliel." What does that mean? We had this not too long ago. What happens if you have a person who gives a matana, but he doesn't want that matana to remain with the beneficiary forever? So he says, initially for the life of Yankiv, I go and give him this matana. When Yaakov passes away, I don't want it to go to the 12 Shvatim, to any of his children. Acharecha, and then it should go to Beryl. And after Chas Shom Beryl passes away, I want it to go to Shmer. So now the question is, clearly, if Yaakov passes away, and the guf of whatever matana it was is still extant, then it goes, of course, to Beryl. And the same thing is, after Beryl passes away, it goes to Shmer. However, does the original person, that is Yaakov, the first beneficiary, does he have the right to go and sell it? Says Rav Shimon Gamliel, yes, he has that right. However, it's really not appropriate to go and sell it, because since the original benefactor said, I want it to go to Yaakov, and after that to Beryl, and then to go in Shmerel. So obviously his intent was that this shouldn't stay with Yaakov forever, but that eventually it should travel to Beryl. But if he's going to go and sell it, then there'll be nothing left, because sell a piece of real estate or whatever, you have the money, and the money might be, you might not invest it wisely, or you might use it and invest it in drinks, and you'll drink the whole thing up, and then you'll be a shikr for a few days, and there won't be any money left, or you waste it on other things. Anyway, the point is, says Reb Shimon Gamliel, although you have the legal right to go and sell the nechosim that you received from that benefactor, but it's not the appropriate thing to do because the benefactor wanted to go after that to Beryl and Tishmer. So Abaye says, who's an Arusha Orim? Arusha Orim means not only he's a sinister Rasha, like the Nochoshoye Orim, but Orim means also without any clothing, meaning he gets no benefit. When you happen to get a benefit from giving the Eitzah, you're part of a kanunya, or at least if you're getting an hourly fee for giving these eitzes, okay, so you have a stake. I can understand why you're giving this advice. But if you don't get any benefit of it, just to go and cause aggravation, irritation to others, you're a Rosh Arim. So isn't that the same case over here? If Rav Huna is going to go and falsely give a get to his wife, not falsely, he's giving a get, but it's only pro forma, he doesn't really mean it, only to be able to go and collect on the ksuva from his father, isn't that giving an Eitzah of Rosha Orim? So how would Abaye even suggest it? Everything more, that would be in a vacuum. You're right. Here, Benoy Shani, Vitzur Benabonin Shani. We're not talking about that Moshe Bar Atzvi would go and give to a third party. He's giving for his son. And his son is a Talmud Chochem. And it could be, although the Gemara doesn't speak it out, but it could be what Abaye is saying to himself is that Moshe Bar Atzri should have been giving him money all along and not allowing for his son and his daughter-in-law to live in abject poverty. He should have been supporting them. So the way to go and convince the father to go and give money to the children is, unfortunately, through such a subterfuge, by giving the get and then collecting and then remarrying, except for the fact, of course, that he's a kohen, but without that, he'd be able to go and support himself. So it could be a buy hold under these circumstances. You're not being a Rosh Orem, you're being a Tzavik Orem, that you're allowing this Talmud Chacham to live and to breathe through the benefit of his father supporting him. Okay. Frank Timur, but I have another problem. Va'orevu, Moshe Ba'atzi was just an orev. V'kaimelan, we have a rule that orev d'ksuva loy mishtabet, that an orev or ksuva does not have a shiba, does not have a requirement to pay on it. Now this concept is a little bit difficult to understand, but the Gemara is going to say in the bottom of the Omud, that because of the Shidduch crisis in the times of Chazal, Shidduch crisis wasn't invented in 2024, it's already in times of Chazal, it was difficult to go and marry off daughters, and to convince Kalis to marry Chassanim, and Chassanim to marry Kalis. So sometimes you need a little bit of a push. Sometimes that was a financial push. So therefore, many people, at least some people, would agree to be an Orev of the Ksuba to be able to nudge the Kala and the Chosin to get married. The Kala says, oh, you know what, it's very fine, I'd like to get married, of course, Tavla Mason, Tandumul Mason, Aramla, I want to get married for sure. But what happens if this marriage terminates? What happens if the Chosin doesn't like me? What happens if Chas V'Shalom passes away? What's going to be? What's going to be my financial future? Says an Orev, I'll take care of it. Okay, you can take care of it. Whew, nothing to worry about. And they get married and they live happily ever after. So therefore, that's what the Gemara says, bottom line, we're going to see it later on, that this man, the Yama holds Orev deksuva loy mishtabit. He's not on the hook. So that being the case, Moshe Bar Atzri can say, the only reason why I agreed to it is nobody wanted to marry my son, Rav Huna, because Rav Huna Nebuch was a poor guy. And so therefore I had to go and give that a little shtip. And therefore the Arvis is loy mishtabit. So why did Moshe Bar Atzri have to go and pay in the first place? Abai is giving an Eitzah. The Moshe Bar Atzri should have to go and pay. I'm just an Arev. Arev Le Mishtab. Everything more Kablan Hab. He wasn't just an Arev Diksuv. He was an Arev Kablan Diksuv. Ooh, Arev Kablan. Then you have to pay. Honey Echelman Yabakam Diksuv Avagav Lesley Nechsi Lebal Mishtabed Shapir. According to the Yama that holds that Takan Orev Kablan, even though the Baal had no nechosim at the time of marriage, when he takes upon himself this kablanis, he has to go and pay. It's good. And that's why Moshe Ba'atzri would have had to pay. Eleman Yami Islay Mishtabri Leslie like Mishtab, that in the case where the obligor, meaning the chosim that's getting married, if he has no nechosim, then even Orev Kablan's acceptance of a guarantee is worthless, because he's only willing to be in a kablan if at least the chosin today has nechosin. Okay, obviously things he may fall on hard times, but on the other hand, maybe he'll become a multimillionaire. He has, Baruch Hashem, a corpus, he has some nechosin. So that's if you hold it. If he has nothing, the art of kablan's acceptance of guarantee is irrelevant, it's meaningless. So we see obviously Rav Huna didn't have a penny. So Moshe Bar Atzri, even if he was an Orev Kablan, L'choyre, you could not get him to go and pay. At the time that he got married, Rav Huna, Baruch Hashem, had enough money. Baruch Hashem, at that time, he had a little business, whatever. He had some savings. Unfortunately, at the time of our Gemara, when things were very, very strained and very limited in terms of financing, because unfortunately, ishtadif is usually a reference to a field that has gotten ruined as a result of some sort of major flood or major storm or something like that. So, lav dafka that he had a field, but of course, most people were in agriculture at the time, so it could be taka that he had a good field, which was producing nicely, ishtadif, and now Hurricane Sandy came and destroyed the whole thing. And therefore, Nebuch now he has to go to his father, the Orev Kablan, to pay. And the Iboy Yisema Abel Gabi Brei Shibud Meshabed Nafshe. Even if a normal Orev or an Orev Kablan would not be required to go and pay in a situation where the Chosin had no funds, but when a father becomes an Orev on behalf of his son, then he really gives it his whole heart and soul, because after all, it's his own son. The Ima we learned Orev Dechsuva do we call Loi Meshab. If it's an Orev Dechsuva, Gunished. Kablan the Baal Choyv, do we call Mishtabit? If you're talking not about a Ksuv, but about Choyv, and you're a Kablan, Avad, he's a primary obligor, he's Avad on the hook. Kablan the Ksuva, which is what the Gemara said Moshe Bar Atzri was, V'orev the Baal Choyv, plegi. Marasavi Islay Nechsil Loiv Mishtabit. If the Loiv initially had Nechosim, so when he took upon himself the Arvis Kablanas, then he meant it, because after all, I'm hoping that it won't happen. It's at least a 50-50 chance the loiv will be able to pay because he has some nechosim. However, ilesle, if he had nothing, loiv mishtabit, zero. And if umar sova, that's what one man yaman. Umar sova, bein isle, ubein lesle, mishtabit. regardless of whether or not the loiva has any nechasim, if you happen to be an Orev Kablan de Ksuva, or an Orev de Baal Chayiv, you're on the hook, you have to go and pay. V'hilchas, what's the halacha? Orev bein Islay u bein Lesley, bein Islay bein Lesley is referring to the loiva. Say, if the loiva had nechasim at the time that he took out the loan, or at the time that he got married, bein Islay bein Lesley, mishtab, the Orev has to go and pay. Bar mi Orev de Ksuva. Or the ksuva is already an exception to the rule. The alpha gab the islay le baal, even though if the baal had money at the time, and this person took upon himself arvas, and 20 years later, there's a get, unfortunately, loy mishtabit. Why not? My taima. Mitzvah di avad. What's the mitzvah? Let's look at the Rishbam right before the wide lines. Mitzvah di avad. Hamishadech bezivugan, when he helps out the shidduch, ain't that lefrey arvas. Ah! He is not really seriously taking upon himself any financial responsibility. Al miskaben lezavgon, he wants to go and bring the schus and kala together. Shaydei arvizu misratzin. As a result of his saying, yeah, I'm on the hook. So then they'll be asking him to go and get married. He has not caused her any financial damage. He only means for her benefit. I wanted to get married. Obviously, we're not talking about modern society where, unfortunately, there's so many getting rampant in our community. Years ago, a get was one in a million type of thing. It was a very rare type of situation. So therefore, when he gave this, I'm going to be the Orva, I'll be fine. So then she said, at least I don't have that financial worry. She would agree to the chasana, and then he and she would be happy ever after. My time, says, what's the reason why an Orv Diksuva Loi mishtabit, mitzvah diavad, his whole intention is to do mitzvahs, to get them together, and he didn't take any money away from her, nothing ventured, nothing lost. She won't get the benefit of the arvus, but she doesn't lose anything, because at least in the interim, she'll have been married with a husband, and tavla mesiv tandu.
Isn't there a smachta then?
Yeah, that's why he's takapotra, says him, according to this man, the Amar, I feel the isle the baal, loi mishtabit. Like you're saying, it's a smachta, therefore he doesn't have to pay. We'll stop over here. Omer Funimitsum tomorrow.